This is Work in Progress, a show about the meaning and identity we find in work. From Slack. Slack is where work happens, at places like the grocery retailer Ocado Technology and Gaza Sky Geeks, a startup accelerator and co-working space in Gaza. More on them at the end of the show. Check us out at slack.com/podcast or tweet us. We're at Slack Stories. I'm Dan Meisner, and this week we're talking about the sacrifices we make for work and the high price some people are willing to pay in exchange for a career they love. It's something we've been thinking a lot about lately with the possible changes to U.S. immigration policy. For some, it makes pursuing their dreams that much more difficult, if not impossible. Coming up, we'll meet an entrepreneur who packed her bags and, in a dramatic escape from Gaza, left everyone she loved behind for a once-in-a-lifetime chance to pursue her dream. That's coming up, but first, the true confessions of a workaholic.
All right, why don't we get started? Sorry for the delay. Jason.
Okay, Friday was, of course, my 911 day, so that was primarily the focus. I also planned
Dennis Pillarinos is leading his team in their daily stand-up at his tech company, BuddyBuild, which is a service to help developers of mobile apps test their software. He's the sort of boss who's well-respected and just a little bit feared. Like other tech entrepreneurs, he's always been driven, highly ambitious, and a bit of a workaholic.
My goals were almost all exclusively career-oriented. It's like you start at level 5, and then you go to level 6, and you do these things, and you become level 7. And so you just want to continue to be successful and kind of check the list off.
Dennis started his career at Microsoft in Redmond, Washington. By his mid-20s, he'd worked his way up to spearhead the delivery of the company's cloud service. Dennis earned a reputation for stopping at nothing to get the job done. When a hacker discovered a security flaw in the cloud system days before a big launch, Dennis came to the rescue.
We took turns fixing and kind of patching these security holes for 2 days straight, like just taking shifts on the couch that was in my office. I literally didn't even have a shower at that time.
When Dennis wasn't pulling all-nighters, he was working 12 to 14-hour days, getting by on cans of Diet Coke.
Like 12 to 15 cans of Coke. And at one point, one of the kind of administrators on the team got an email from facilities asking if someone had been taking home the Diet Coke because we'd been consuming so much of it as compared to everywhere else on the campus.
Besides the career goals he was checking off, he also made a list of personal goals that he was determined to master.
You meet someone in college or what have you, you get married, you have a really good job, you have kids, the white picket fence, so on and so forth. And so we were kind of on that trajectory and on that path.
Dennis married his college sweetheart. Check. On paper, everything looked great. They were living in Seattle, and he continued to work crazy hours. But he started to miss his hometown of Vancouver and his mother and sister there. So he got a transfer.
So I moved back to Vancouver to kind of carve out a life for the two of us. And we kind of did the long-distance commute thing for a little bit of time.
They kept their place in Seattle, where his wife stayed, until things were more settled in Vancouver. Dennis felt like his life was finally getting some balance. And then one day, he was doing some bookkeeping.
And so at one point, I was logged in to my cell phone provider, and I was checking my account, and I noticed that they hadn't applied this discount.
The discount was for long-distance charges between Seattle and Vancouver.
And so then I thought, oh, I wonder if my wife is kind of doing the same thing. So I logged into that account, and I noticed that there was a bunch of text messages to a number that I didn't recognize.
Weird. And the text messages were happening at all hours. Suddenly, Dennis realized what might be happening. He called his wife back in Seattle.
And said, hey, you know, like, where are you? What are you doing? And she said, oh, I'm at home.
Now remember, Dennis was in Vancouver. He had a sneaking suspicion that she was lying. So he called her bluff.
Oh, because I said, well, I'm sitting here and I don't see you in the house. And she's like, okay, I'll be right there. I'm like, well, I thought you said you were here. She says, no, I'll be right there. And I'm like, where are you? And then I confronted her. I'm like, oh, I think you're with this person. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. She's like, we need to chat about something.
His wife had been having an affair for most of their marriage.
She'd been basically living like a double life over those 2 years, which somewhat coincided with kind of the time that I'd been spending working on that kind of cloud platform thing. Without question, like the single worst, most painful thing that's ever happened to me.
The world that Dennis had meticulously crafted for himself, all of those lists, it had fallen apart. He got divorced. He was angry and exhausted. And then he realized his own culpability. Work had always been his number one priority. Everything else, including his own relationships, came second.
I think she just felt like there was a stronger connection between her and that person. That potentially I was maybe more absent, that we hadn't really nurtured the relationship to the degree that we should have.
Dennis eventually left Microsoft and worked for a time in Silicon Valley before doing his own startup back in Vancouver.
Ultimately, what I learned at the end of the day, which is like, you should do what makes you happy. And if you're not, stop. That was it. And it's a really simple thing to understand, but it's an incredibly hard thing to do. So like, I was probably doing a lot of things in my 20s that made other people happy, or, oh, wow, Dennis is successful in doing this, that, and the other thing. But internally, I almost certainly wasn't happy, like not in a completely fulfilling way.
Today, Dennis is working on a better balance between work and life, and he's paying much closer attention to what really matters, his family and his new relationship.
I deeply respect her perspective and opinion. Like, she wants the best for me. We just came back from like a 2.5 week vacation. It's the first time in 22 years that I wasn't connected to the internet.
Dennis gained a new perspective on work and life, but that perspective came at a high cost. We hear a lot about work-life balance, and for many of us, work-life balance is a series of small everyday choices. How late you stay at the office, whether you work on a holiday, or how often you check your work messages at home. That kind of stuff. Small sacrifices. But sometimes the stakes are much higher, and the choice between work and family is all or nothing. And that's what our next story is about. It features a young entrepreneur from Gaza. We're calling her Lena, but that's not her real name. We changed it because she's afraid it could impact her life and her livelihood, especially given the current political climate. Here's her story. Rockets and warplanes flood the skies over Israel and Gaza in the summer of 2014. Hamas and Israel are fighting, and 24-year-old Palestinian Lena is desperate. Desperate to get out.
They bombed houses like less than 50 meters away from us. Our neighbor's house, 3 stories house, was knocked off the ground. Imagine like a family of 14 members without a warning, and they were all gone. And we had to evacuate the house in the middle of the night, running with our pajamas and like without wearing anything in our feet. Like it was a horror movie.
Just a month before the war began, Lena thought she had her golden ticket. She received a scholarship to do her master's in engineering at an American university in the fall. But how would she get there now?
The U.S. consulate told us that Israel won't allow any student to leave Gaza that summer. That was a devastating moment.
Then, early one morning, Lena's mother shakes her out of bed.
She told me, oh, your uncle called and you should go to the borders now.
Her uncle received news of an opening along the Egyptian border. The government announced a temporary ceasefire and fighting stopped for now. This was her chance.
It was like, run now or never.
Lena chooses run and throws a few things into a backpack. her mother sews a wallet into the inside of Lena's pant leg for security and makes a phone call.
She called someone that started a business in the war. He was the only taxi driver that is driving back then. He was charging extra, but like he was the only option you have.
Lena hops into the Renegade cab, leaving behind her father and four younger siblings. But her mother insists on coming with her to the border.
I was so terrified, but we thought that this is the only chance and we had to go try. We didn't really think that I'll make it.
But word got out. They arrive at the border only to find a sea of frantic people.
Too many people were there. Children were crying, women were crying, like, it was so crazy. And the same time, the background, you have like some airstrike sound getting closer and closer.
The ceasefire is starting to unravel. Border officials are only letting Egyptian nationals through. Lena looks to her mother for guidance, but she's looking somewhere else. She's scanning the crowd.
And there was a family that they had both like nationalities, Palestinians and Egyptians. And my mother knew them and she was able to talk to them.
Lena's mom convinces the family to take Lena on as a cousin and accompany her across the border.
They knew someone who works on the border, like a soldier or something. They basically took my passport and put them among their passports. And all of their passports are Egyptians, and I was the only Palestinian one. And it just worked. 2 minutes later, I found myself on the Egyptian side.
But things are moving too fast, and moments after she crosses, it hits her. She forgot to say goodbye to her mom.
We didn't think about the possibilities that I might actually make it. So all what I cared about is to give her my charger so that she can go to the cafe across the street and charge her phone so when they send me back, I can have a way to contact her. So we didn't hug goodbye. We didn't say goodbye. Like I badly wanted to go back at that moment.
It took Lena all she had not to turn around and go back. But she had a plan, and she knew she'd see her family again once she finished her degree.
I was like, I come here, I learn what I need to learn, and then I'll go back and, like, start something big there.
Lena wanted to learn the right skills to build her own business so she could help her community back home in Gaza.
I don't want to make a business just to get richer. Like, I want to help solve a real problem, help make lives in the Middle East easier.
To understand why Lena couldn't easily do that work in Gaza, we need to go back. She was born and raised in a refugee camp in Rafah on the south side of the Gaza Strip.
The UN refers to us as internal refugees. And the refugee camp that I know, people have been there for a long time when I was born, that they already built some apartments and some houses. And they're not very fancy, like the streets were very tiny and you could hear everything that your neighbor was saying to his wife in the next door. It wasn't really a very pleasant place to live in, but it was very fun to be part of that community.
Young Lena would try to lead the pack. She had a reputation for being strong-willed, which sometimes pegged her as a troublemaker.
I was louder, I guess. And you know, like, starting from 11 years old, they start to expect you to wear the hijab in school. And I always had fights over that. I didn't want to do it. And I think I had to fight for like 2 years. And I remember being punished and like kicked out of classes because I'm not wearing a headscarf. And yeah, I was never given the choice to choose to wear it or not. So I never felt comfortable wearing it.
After graduating high school, Lena pursued a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. Her parents would have preferred medicine or teaching, but Lena wanted something else.
I was a maker. Like, I wanted to do stuff by my hand. So basically, I just wanted to not to listen to anyone and prove everyone wrong.
Lena wanted to do great things. During her undergrad, she designed a prototype for a voice-activated wheelchair. And she needed a small open-source prototyping platform called an Arduino in order to complete it. She couldn't find one in Gaza, but that didn't stop her.
And at that time, Israel banned the shipment of any electronic devices to Gaza. Someone in the team with me had an uncle in Egypt, and we got the Arduino delivered to his apartment in Cairo. He was like, "What the hell is that?" And he was just like, "You just bring it. It's just for school." And he hid it in his luggage, and he brought it back to Gaza.
Lena got an opportunity to intern for Microsoft in Cairo. At 22 years old, she received a permit to leave the Gaza Strip for the first time in her life.
Like, I've never seen a bridge before till I made it to Cairo. And that was amazing. It was so big. Like, I was like, oh my God, how did they manage to build those bridges? And I know that it cannot be compared to the first world cities, but still, it's just like, compared to the refugee camp, compared to Gaza, it was the first real city I've ever seen.
After Cairo, Lena was more motivated than ever. She founded a video game startup, she worked for a prestigious NGO, she began freelancing with her programming skills to build mobile apps, and she applied for and won that master's scholarship. And then the war broke out. Let's go back to the summer of 2014. Remember, Lena had just crossed over into Egypt, and she'd left her mom behind on the Gaza side of the border.
And I called my mom. I was like, it seems that I'm not coming back. Now, the problem is, how are you going home? The ceasefire is over, and you will have to go back home alone. And God, I hated myself for that.
Lena offers to turn back, but her mom isn't having any of that.
She saw me trying to build a business in Gaza, and it didn't work. She saw me trying to apply for the best career available in Gaza, and it didn't really work out for me. And I applied for this scholarship, and it finally worked, but I just need to get out. She was willing to do everything to not let me miss that opportunity.
Her mother gets into a taxi alone, and Lena talks to her the whole ride home.
I stayed on the phone with her, and I was able to hear like some bombshell and like airstrikes around her while she was going back. And she was always saying,
no, it's far away, don't worry about it.
But I'm sure it wasn't very far away. She's awesome, like she's the bravest woman I've ever seen.
Lena and her mom haven't seen each other since that day. A month after she crossed into Egypt, Lena's plane touches down in Seattle. The city and its culture quickly grow on her.
So I discovered my favorite thing in the world here, and it's kayaking. I did kayaking everywhere in Seattle. Like, I just abused it. And I just love it. And this is something that you never can do in Gaza. It's not acceptable for women to ride their own, like, boats or kayaks. Like, going to the sea alone as a woman, it's a big deal. Just having a hobby in Gaza is just a very complicated thing for a woman.
After she completes her master's, Lena receives a job offer for an engineering position at a tech company in Silicon Valley, a mythical location for someone like her. So she calls her mom to tell her the good news.
Mom, like, finally, I got my can you believe it? I got my first job in the Silicon Valley. And she was like, Silicon what? And at that moment, I realized that she never heard of Silicon Valley before. And the thing that I was dreaming about all of my life, it meant nothing to them. Like, they really don't understand what I want. But in the same time, they're proud. Like, my mother, she's really happy that to see me happy. And she knows how much my work and, like, my achievements in life mean to me. She doesn't necessarily understand them, but she really tries to.
Just like her newfound passion for kayaking, Lena loves working in Silicon Valley.
Seriously, like, this job is so challenging that I spend more than 9 hours working each day without feeling about it. Like, I'm so into it that I don't realize how, like, the time just passes.
In fact, she can't get enough of life in America. Even the simple things many Americans take for granted.
My friends took me there, and they weren't taking me to see it. It just, they needed to wash their cars. And once it happened, I just went crazy. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And since then, I refer to any awesome thing a car washing experience.
Lena had a plan. Get her master's, go back home, apply her knowledge. But after a few years living in America, her plan has changed.
I didn't realize the potential I had here, you know? After the last war, like, they destroyed everything. Like, the UN announced Gaza as an unlivable place by the year 2020. Gaza is, like, the world's biggest open-air prison. I tried it before, and I'm not sure I can do it again.
Meanwhile, it's still the rest of her family's reality. Their feelings about Lena's absence are mixed.
My younger sister, like, she just doesn't get why I chose to go away. Like, she would never leave Gaza. She would never fly. She would never stay away from my mother. It's really puzzling for her to understand what is it that is so important that make you choose to leave your family. I wish I can visit, but I don't miss a place where I, like, me and my family almost got killed several times there. It's just, like, there's a lot of memories that I just wish to, like, remove from my head.
Lena still plans to build a business that'll help people back in Gaza. But for now, she wants to build it from afar.
This life doesn't make sense anyway, so...
But it's up to the U.S. government to give Lena that chance. She's still waiting to hear back from them. In the meantime, her mom is on the other side of the phone line, quick to remind her what she thinks Lena's priorities should be.
She is happy, but she wants me to get married. She still thinks that I'm underaccomplished because I'm not married and I don't have a kid. Every time she calls, she mentions it. Oh my God. Oh no, like, we're not Americans. This is what she says.
Work in Progress is a show from Slack. All kinds of teams use Slack, like Gaza Sky Geeks. Here's how they use it.
Hi, my name is Ileana Montauk, co-founder of Gaza Sky Geeks, the first startup incubator and tech hub in Gaza. essentially we create jobs and an innovative entrepreneurial community in a disaster zone. Gaza is about the size of the San Francisco Peninsula. It's tiny and it's entirely closed. Most young people there have never left in their lives. It has the highest measured unemployment rate in the world. It also means that it's really hard to connect with people remotely. And we were actually looking for task management tools, but everyone wrote back, like 70 people from around the world wrote back and said, do you guys use Slack? If not, you should use Slack. It's been incredible at making it possible to have a global team collaborate. You know, we love Slack not only because it makes work better, but also because it makes it more fun. It's just so nice that finally one of these professional tools that you use actually comes with this fun angle. It's going to change your life.
To find out more about Slack or to get in touch, visit us. We're at slack.com/podcast or tweet us at Slack Stories. I'm Dan Meisner. Thanks for listening.